to Iconic, where we talk about all things 13th Age. I'm your host, JM, and with me as always are Nick, Becca, and Mark.
Hey.
Hello.
Howdy.
We have a great show for you this week. We do apologize for any dip in quality. We are all recording from our homes during the midst of the quarantine. Before we get into our episode, Nick, do we have any new patrons?
Yes. Boyd graciously joined our patronage this past month as a D8 patron, and we were really excited to have him on our team. And just a special shout out to him and all of the rest of our patrons who so generously are able to support the show and keep it going.
Yeah, we greatly appreciate it. We know that things are crazy right now, so we just appreciate you guys out there, and we'll just keep producing content. So if you haven't checked out the Iconic Production YouTube or Twitch channels, go and check those out. Becca is running a 13th Age game on Monday nights, and on Friday nights, we have a 5e, very dark and bleak game, but it seems to hopefully be getting better. I don't think so. He titled the campaign, "It Gets Worse." So we are going to return to our class acts this week. We're going to be talking about the Necromancer. So we're just going to dive right into it. We typically start our class acts with a discussion of where the Necromancer kind of came from, both in gaming and in fiction. And Mark, correct me if I'm wrong, but I mean, there was a second edition book, the Book of Necromancy. But for the most part, it's just been a school of wizardry, like one of the you could be a specialist wizard in any other edition of D&D, but it was not its own class.
Yeah, no, it was a subset, kind of like if you wanted to be an illusionist or a summoner. It was a separate subclass of being a wizard, a little bit different back then. But it's been around for a while.
Right. Bringing the dead back to life is one of those sort of staples of fiction and mythology. So what are some examples that we could pull from fiction?
One of the ones that I was thinking of is in The Mummy.
Imhotep.
Yes. And then the fact that he is constantly bringing things back to life for the heroes to have to deal with. And then on, I guess, a much less expensive production site, Mythica.
Yes,
the Mythica. Delightful 5-movie D&D campaign that it is.
Which if you have not seen and you need something to do because you're stuck at home, it's on Amazon Prime. Matt Mercer makes several appearances in Mythica. What are some other examples from fiction? Whether they're, you know, villains, I always think of the Cult of the Dragon from the Forgotten Realms. These wizards who, because their founder went completely insane, believed that undead dragons would rule the realms, and so it was their job to help dragons pass into Draco Lichdom, and just very bizarre but very interesting, like sort of villainous organization of necromancers.
Yeah, because the lich isn't bad enough. Let's make it a Draco lich.
Right, right. Now, Mark, you had a classic one.
Yeah, the air quotes. You guys can't see the necromancer. From Tolkien, he made the Ringwraiths. I mean, mm-hmm. He took all these kings and turned them into the baddest of undead.
Right. Yeah. Sauron definitely has some necromantic trappings to him.
Two that had come to my mind, I don't know where they fit on the villainy or hero scale, but Corbold Broach from the Malazan series. He's always a delightful character whenever he popped up. And he always, I mean, as it was depicted in those books, he seemed to have his own agenda. So sometimes what he did kind of appeared helpful, and other times he was obviously self-serving, but you know, he dabbled in necromancy for certain.
Definitely put him as a villain, though. Like, while he may have helped the story along, you know, he went out into the streets and murdered people to make children for himself. So I don't say that as like a heroic character in any way, shape, or form.
Fair enough. The other one that kind of came to mind is, and maybe it's a stretch as a necromancer, would be Dr. Frankenstein. You know, taking the body parts, sewing them back together, and it's alive. You know, bringing it back. I don't know if I would lump him in with as a typical necromancer, but he was a character that came to my mind from fiction.
No, I think that's a good one. I think if I remember correctly, in the Book of Necromancers from second edition, they had basically it was somebody who studied anatomy. And that was a version of the necromancer class. Like, it was not magic. It was science that they used to sort of stitch these things back together and bring them to life. Now, any heroic necromancers that you can think of? One very clearly came to my mind, and that would be the great Dr. Orpheus from the Venture Brothers TV show. He is a necromancer. He brings the dead to life. Becca, you had one.
I did. From the Percy Jackson and the Olympian series. So it's a middle school level reading book series. Hades, Persephone, and even a couple of the kids in the book are able to use necromancy. And it is established that Hades really isn't the bad guy in the books. And Persephone, we never think of Persephone as a bad Greek deity, but, those try to paint necromancy in a better light.
Well, and it's interesting because, right, necromancy basically means knowledge from the dead. And so it's really only sort of in kind of our modern look at this that it goes beyond just getting knowledge from the dead, right? Like, you could argue that the Witch of Endor in Samuel would be a necromancer because Saul seeks her out to bring knowledge from the lands of the dead. But we've kind of moved away from its original meaning into this much more active, not just knowledge, but bringing things back into sort of this unnatural state. And so in 13 True Ways, we are gifted with the necromancer as a class. Now, I think every game of 13th Age I have run has had a necromancer in it. Much like the demonologist, it's one of those classes that sort of traditionally has been a villainous archetype, yet we get this sort of heroic version of them in 13th Age.
Now, is that something that's kind of unique to 13th Age? I mean, are the necromancers in some of the other systems, are they more villainous in nature or in bent?
Not necessarily. Like Mark and I were saying earlier, you could be a necromancer in previous editions of Fantasy 20 games. You were just a wizard who specialized in the school of necromancy. Okay. So it was a wizard class, but it was not a full, like, unique on its own sort of class.
So what do you think has driven the shift from this typically villainous concept to be more of something that player characters would want to take a hold of, either as a subtype of a wizard or as a full-on class like in 13th Age?
I think there's something to be said about wanting the minion. Like, there's something about having just the sort of minion-y type of character, the summoner. And so I think that in some ways, one, you have this idea of playing the outcast hero that has sort of, or anti-hero that sort of has, arisen in our culture, why we're so fascinated with this kind of concept. But I also think for 13th Age, you have one of the core icons being the Lich King. And because you can have a conflicted relationship with the Lich King, there is sort of baked into the Dragon Empire people who have power and connection to this King of Undeath that may not want it or may think, I can play with fire in order to do something better with it. Sort of like we talked about with the demonologist, this idea that I'm using this very clearly morally black type of magic, but I'm using it for a good end, and maybe I'll get through it unscathed. At least that's what appeals to the necromancer for me, that and having a skeletal minion. Like, just hands down, I want to take more actions at the table. So, well, let's get into the Necromancer and kind of the overview of the class. We talked a little bit about it. It is a spellcasting class. It does have some options for summoning, and the summoning kind of goes anywhere from like being like a ranger, where you basically have an animal companion who just happens to be the body of someone else that you raised, your kind of skeletal minion. We'll talk about that when we get into talents. And there are additional ways to, in those clutch moments in battle, summon even more skeletal or undead hordes. As a GM, I will just say, if you have someone playing a necromancer, do not give it to the person with analysis paralysis, because they can very quickly have multiple things on the battlefield that they will have to do during their turn. It's very easy for that one turn to bloat to the point where it's taking up the lion's share of the time at the table. Now, one of the things I really liked about the Necromancer, and I know that I've seen comments to on the opposite side of the argument, is the class feature wasting away. This idea that all Necromancers have this tie to undeath, and that if you have a positive constitution modifier, you actually take that as a penalty to all of your attack rolls, because you have too much life in your system to properly channel the energies of death. And there's actually a feat that if you have a negative constitution modifier, you can get a bonus to hit with your necromancy spells. What are your guys' thoughts on this wasting away feature?
As playing a straight up necromancer, I think it's probably one of the most thematic class features of any of the classes in 13th Age. I mean, just this one feature itself, it kind of thematically, it gets you into the idea of what this class actually is, or who this character actually is. I mean, you know, with the thought of you keep going up and towing that line between life and death and keep reaching across and pulling stuff back, and it's going to take its toll on you, right? It's going to end up removing a lot of the life that you have, or getting you that much closer to death, and you're familiar with it. And so you're going to be gaunt. You're going to be frail.
Well, and you also get a bonus there too. I think the designers understand that if you're going to put that limitation, that means that your squishy wizard is even squishier. And so as the necromancer, part of wasting away is you don't die as easily as other characters when it comes to death saves. You get a fifth death save, basically. You don't die after four failed, or even four last gasp saves. Although your body is weak, your spirit is holding on to this realm. And so you do sort of exist in this, I don't want to say half dead, because there is actually a talent about being even more dead. All right, so let's talk about core mechanics and features that we like about this. Now, Becca, you have summoning all the things written down in the notes. You want to talk about the summoning portion of the Necromancer?
You have spells to summon things, and you can also have a skeletal minion with you. You cannot summon more than one thing at a time. As you use higher level spells, you are able to summon better things, but they will never be as good as the monsters that you might meet in, as they put it, for real.
I really like the feats that they, like, if you really want to go the summoning route, the three feats for summoning. The adventurer one lets your summoned creatures use the escalation die, which is actually insanely good when you have multiple things on the field. The champion mm-hmm. one increases the number of mooks that you summon when you use a summoning spell by one. So you're going to throw more of them out there. And then the epic feat really kind of feeds into that. They're undead. You're not summoning live things. And the first time one of your non-mook summoned creatures is dropped in a battle, you roll a save. And if you succeed, they stay in at 10 hit points. So they basically have an extra 10 hit points on a normal save the first time they drop. And yeah, at high levels, necromancers are scary interesting to play. If you are a role player and really like Nick was saying, sort of the thematic class elements that kind of pair with your character idea, really look at the necromancer. There's so many very flavorful and very thematic abilities buried away in this class. So let's talk about talents. Mark, what's your favorite talent for the Necromancer?
I love Death Knell, which allows you to harvest the battlefield, as it were, as Necromancers do. And you just have to keep track with the GM as far as when enemies reach a certain level on their hit points, you can just harvest them, suck their life out, and heal yourself for that amount of damage, which is fun at play. We've had one at our table, and it's always fun when the Necromancer goes, how many hit points do they have left? And you're like, yes, he's going to harvest. That's a good one.
And they heal for it, and it's a quick action. So in theory, yes, if you have enough things low enough, you could just Death Knell three times and do nothing else with your action and heal up. I really like, and again, this kind of goes back to our thematic look at what Necromancers were in previous F20 games and kind of where they are in fantasy. You can play, you can get Dead Wizard or Death Priest. This idea that you came to the path of necromancy from something else. Either you were a wizard who then decided to specialize in necromancy, or you were a priest who either served a god of death or, again, used sort of the necromancy sphere to gain more power and then finally kind of shifted over into this other thing. And they allow you to get sort of abilities from other classes. The Death Wizard gives you Dead Wizard gives you the cantrip class feat from the wizard, except you can't cast mending, you can't fix things, and you can't cast your light spell looks a little more bizarre. But you can take feats that let you switch out some of your necromancy spells for wizard spells. Death Priest kind of functions in the same way with a little bit different thematic look at it. You can perform like short rites that let you call up spirits, and then at higher feats gain cleric spells. So what about you, Becca?
There's a couple of them, I mean, that do really cool for role-playing. And one of them is the Cackling Soliloquist. If you manage to scream, cackle maniacally, describe the grandeur of your enemy's defeat, all while doing your movement, quick action, and action, you can add a benefit to what you are doing, and your daily spells can possibly recharge after battle. It lends to the idea of the villain's soliloquy as they destroy the hero. However, it's flipped, and it's the hero's soliloquy while they destroy the villains, in theory. But it gives them a little bit of a bonus to what they're doing. And it clearly is best for people who like to roleplay with full melodrama.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're shy or super nervous about talking in character, it's probably not a talent you want to pick.
Yes, it is right up there with the wizard's Vance's polysyllabic invocation. So, Nick, you had two that you really liked.
Well, the first one is Redeemer, and it kind of also hinges on that relationship that you have with the Lich King and the fact that the Lich King is the Lord of the Undead. Conceptually, the Redeemer is that when you summon one of the undead, you end up becoming their master. And when you release them, they are now released. They are completely free again. And so, you know, claiming them even momentarily from the Lich King, having them serve you, they're going to be more willing to do that because they know that when they're done with their service for you, they're going to be free. And so what ends up happening if you take this talent is that when the undead that you summon, when they die or when they drop to zero hit points, they end up kind of having this explosion of holy energy that goes out and radiates damage to everyone that they're engaged with. I like that idea because it again, thematically goes into the relationship that you have with the Lich King, the relationship you have with the undead. It has some more bonds that you can leverage as the GM with how you want to run the whole story, and also has a little bit of a white necromancer element to it. So you're actually doing, in a weird twisted way, you're doing a service, you're doing a favor to the undead by summoning them into combat with you. The other one that I really liked was Sword of Dead, and again, because you've been walking back and forth across this line between life and death, and you're summoning the undead back into life and then releasing them back into death again, you've kind of already died. I mean, you've reached across that barrier, that plane, so many times that you're already a little bit there. So you don't need to do things like eating or sleeping. You don't need to be breathing, things like you can't drown. So there's some story elements that you can really leverage as a character with those sorts of abilities. But then it also, because you're already sort of dead, it becomes that much harder for you to actually die. All right. So you've already got your 5 death saves or last gasp saves instead of the 4. But then once you actually do die, you have another chance to roll just a normal save, adding your charisma modifier to it. And then if you succeed at that, you pop back up and healing using a free recovery. So you end up living your whole life kind of sort of dead. And then because of that, when it comes time for you to actually die, you're still kind of sort of alive. So I really like that that talent.
And then, of course, there's also the talent that just gives you a skeletal minion, which...
Yeah, that's a great one.
Yeah, why would you not take that one coming into this class? Now, it is a spellcasting class, so it works basically like all of the other spellcasting classes. So you get spells, they tier up. As you level up, you can prepare so many spells by level. What are ones that stood out to you guys?
I really liked the Bones Beneath spell, which is a 3rd level spell. And in addition to being able to have a skeletal minion and summoning your own undead to serve you, when you cast the Bones Beneath, you end up dealing a lot of damage to the mooks. And every mook that drops as a result of that damage ends up becoming another mook under your control. Not one that you've summoned, but you've essentially just said, all right, all of you, you're all dead. And now you're all come back. You're mine. Go back and fight your cohorts. And then the Rotting Curse, which is a 5th level spell, just does a massive amounts of ongoing damage, which is always a fun thing to do as a player, especially since that damage increases every time the target fails its save.
Mark, yep. What about you?
The negative energy shield.
Yes.
Which makes, go ahead, hit me. I mean, it just invites attacks. Damages people who try to attack you in melee.
It's what is it, a natural even, I think? Yeah, if they roll a natural odd attack, they take 66 plus your intelligence mod in damage, and it just goes up from there.
Yeah, I mean, at 9th level, it's 2d8 times 10. I mean, it's epic, but woo, that's a lot of damage.
I mean, as a squishy character, and as a spellcaster, you're probably not wanting to get you're probably not wanting to be engaged with too many of the enemies. And so having this close quarter spell in your back pocket really would be an asset if you just can't get away and you keep getting actually targeted with the melee attacks. You're like, all right, fine, put up the shield, bring it.
Well, speaking of that, two of the ones I like Circle of Death. You can't actually cast this spell until the escalation die is 3 or higher, and it hits every nearby creature, allies and enemies. And so on your turn, you roll to hit everyone. And it's got different things that happen if you hit an ally or miss an ally or hit an enemy or miss an enemy. But it's just this great, all right, I'm done with this. And there's just this pulse of negative energy that does something sort of to everyone. The other one I really liked was Feign Defeat. And having Finger of Death as a spell, but that's neither here nor there. So Feign Death is you take a bunch of damage that you can't prevent in any way. And then at the start of the next turn, even if you're dead, you get to spend 3 free recoveries, heal to 0, and then go up from there. So it's that, well, all right, I'm fighting the creature, it's focused on me. I'm going to die. You're not going to kill me. I'm going to kill myself. And then I'll come back at the start of the next turn. I really just like this thematic. Again, the thematic nature of this spell.
Mm-hmm. And because it's a quick action to cast, I mean, you could do a lot of damage with another spell and then make it look like you went out with a flare and all right, that's it.
Yeah. I do like that the 9th level version of this spell just does more damage to you, sort of guaranteeing that you will die doing it and then come back. Becca, what are some of the ones that you like the best?
I mean, Finger of Death is always just a classic, but Vampiric Form is also fascinating because at the start of your turn, you heal. As if you are draining the life from everything around you and continuing on. So if you do have someone who is focused on your necromancer, if they can make a choice of either they drop and feign death, or they just take on a vampiric form and continue to drain the life of everything around them.
Would you guys play a necromancer, having looked at this?
Absolutely. I was able to play a necromancer in a play-by-post game a couple of years ago, and in my memory banks, that was definitely one of the most fun classes I've played, and it certainly is one I would certainly come back to and play again.
I think necromancer is on the list of things to play someday. I don't know how high it is on that list, but I think I would prefer it to the demonologist.
Interesting. Why is that?
Just personally. Maybe it's because I can see the role-playing aspect of necromancer and attempting redemption for all those terrible things I've done in my life. Or the fact that I can summon things that aren't going to turn on me once they die.
Mm. That's fair. Now, you have a necromancer in the iconic 13th Age game.
I do. And reading through this, I feel like she's missing some things. And I need to go through and be like, hey, here's some more spells. Take them, please. Yes, going through this again, I'm looking at some of the different spells and talents, and I want to double check with her. What does she have? Because I'm seeing the same spells from her, and I'm thinking, ooh, we could get you some new ones.
Now, Mark, you looked like you were disagreeing with Becca that the necromancer is higher than the demonologist.
Yes, my demonologist scoffs at your necromancer.
Well, my skeleton isn't going to try to kill me unlike your demon. So
my demons never lost control until I died.
But they did lose control.
When I died, which, who cares then? Because I'm dead. Mechanically, it sounds like fun. I probably won't play it, but I'm not big on spellcasters. I like the demonologist, since we went that way, just because they could also fight also.
Right, you went Path of Blood, so you were able to wield heavy armor and get in there and mix it up.
Yeah, it was almost like a ranger, but instead of a nice furry animal, it was a demon. But, you know, hey, they could be cuddly.
I think it would be fun to pair up a multi-class necromancer fighter, necromancer sword mage, and kind of go with this sort of like almost like a death knight, to use the term from the popular MMO, you know, the person who wades into battle raising the dead as they go. I think that would be just that would be a good way to build the Rivener. If Chris ever plays him, is do sort of like a fighter necromancer multi-class and really kind of see how that goes.
But they have to have a little basket of dragon's teeth. So when, you know, thematically he has to spread those out in the field to raise the skeletons.
Mm-hmm. That would be awesome. In the 2E book I was just reading on Cult of the Dragon, you can get dragon's teeth that do that. I'm like, that's a great magic item. All right, so Nick, why don't we start with you? If you were to build a necromancer, what sort of backgrounds would you want to see? Or if you had someone in play, what would you kind of want to see?
Well, I really liked the former mummy example given in the 13 True Ways. I just think there's a lot that can be there, especially since there's potentially the unknown aspect of, well, who were you before a mummy? Versus I woke up and I've already been dead. And so I'm able to now continue to bring other dead back to life and have them serve me and such, similar to Ahimotep in The Mummy. And then as I was thinking through it, the phrase came to mind, dead men tell no tales, ... until they do. And thinking maybe as a fun background would be a washed up tale weaver or a washed up storyteller, someone who, you know, they wanted to go around and be maybe a bard or be able to regale people with these exciting stories, but just never could come up with any good stories. And so they started dabbling in necromancy to get the good stories from all of the other people who are dead. You know, I thought that'd be a fun background to leverage.
Interesting. Becca, what about you? What would you do?
Well, so the necromancer in my game on Monday nights, one of her backgrounds is warlord. And I really like that idea paired with a death knight type character that you were talking about, JM. Someone who knows battle, has been in battle, and continues to battle even after death.
I was actually thinking about something along the lines of having a background of being a very powerful wizard, you know, tying my one unique thing in my background together to where I purposefully became a lich and then am now like it cost all of my magical energy. So I have all of this knowledge of being a wizard that I'm slowly having to rebuild now that I've crossed over. And I definitely take Sword of Dead and Dead Wizard as my talents. But this idea that, no, this was on purpose. This wasn't an accident. I didn't stumble into necromancy. This was a purposeful choice, knowing that I would lose all of my old magic ability, but this is the route I want to take. And then sort of play up that, well, when somebody does that, can they still stay true to themselves? Or do they sort of like, that's one of the, and when we talk, do our undead episode, that's one of the things I love about liches, right? Liches are super powerful, and then this ennui sort of sets in, and they sort of waste away, and that's how you get demi-liches. They're liches who have sort of almost completely given up on this immortal existence that they spent so much time trying to get. I think that'd be a cool balance to play over over 10 levels. So, Mark, what about you? What would you build if I forced you to play a necromancer? What would you come background-wise?
I like the way you went. That's what I was thinking. Failed wizard, but a prior wizard, but where you took the, okay, I know I'm giving all this to become a lich, I would pick failed witch, where I was just not quite the archmage. I'm going to become a lich. Oh, crap, it failed. And now I'm this low level and I have to relearn things because I'm a failed lich.
Oh, failed lich is spectacular, Mark.
You know, and then have to work your way back up to that point.
So wrapping up our thoughts on, we've kind of did our final thoughts on the class, what we thought about it, whether we would play it or not. How would you see using them in either the Dragon Empire or a more classic fantasy setting? Any thoughts on that question? I mean, we've talked that this is kind of a iconic archetype in classic fantasy, right? The necromancer as a being in the world, but how would you sort of see using them in the Dragon Empire, right? Because one of the things is, if there are people with classes, then obviously this is something, aside from the occultist, that exists broadly in your setting.
Well, I think it's, considering it's more of a villainous idea, doubling down with like the Orc Lord, I think could lead to some really interesting campaigns. It's not just that the Orc Horde is invading from the north, it's that they're bringing an army of undead with them, or they're transforming all of the towns and villages that they're conquering into, you know, a greater army.
A la Winter is Coming?
Something like that.
Yeah. Which is frightening.
So we've talked about taking a icon that typically is good and making them more ambiguous, or vice versa. The two ideas I had is, what if the priestess, what if there's more clerics who are becoming necromancers because the priestess is, in an attempt to subvert the Lich King's power, is kind of guiding some of her more morally ambiguous followers towards this path to sort of drain the power from the Lich King. And then what does that do to her if she is sort of sanctioning or empowering this? The other idea I had is kind of flipping the Winter is Coming idea on its head. What if the Lich King is trying to increase necromancy because something is coming that only the dead can survive? And so in his own twisted sort of way, he's trying to ensure the Dragon Empire that he built still survives in some form after this apocalyptic event happens, and the 14th age could be the age of the dead.
Makes sense. I mean, an army of undead wouldn't run against demons, where humans and orcs and elves would be like, oh, I'm out of here. The undead.
Or a massed cavalry charge. But we all saw that coming before the outcome was. Becca, what about you?
Don't get me started.
Or as an ambiguous icon, the High Druid, one who is ready for humanity to end, and so has employed necromancers in order, almost along a similar vein of the Lich King, in the idea that humans will not survive this, whatever this is, whatever is coming. And so if I can change all the humanoids into undead, that will help survive the Empire, and perhaps nature will continue, and the Lich King's empire will continue, and nature and death can live side by side.
Kind of just spinning off what you just said, I think the first time I encountered the Necromancer as a hero, or a class that could be used as a heroic sort of thing, was in the old video game Diablo 2. The Necromancer was called up because they sort of believed in the same cycle that Becca just mentioned with like the High Druid, right? That like life naturally flows into death, but when you are fighting against the Hells, even the Necromancer looks heroic because you are fighting against, right, demons and devils. And so that could be a bent in a campaign. Oh, that'd be a great campaign with like a commander and the demonologist and the Necromancer and a druid kind of, well, yeah, we're corrupt, but the thing that's coming is way worse. So we are, we may not be the heroes you want, but we are definitely the heroes that you need.
Yeah, that would be quite fascinating.
Well, as always, thanks for listening, and we will be back in 2 weeks with more Iconic.
And if you'd like to support the show, you can do so by becoming a patron at patreon.com/iconicpodcast. Well, you've been listening to the Iconic Podcast.
If you have any questions, comments, or feedback, you can contact us at iconicpodcast@gmail.com or call and leave a voicemail at 720-924-1706.
And be sure to check out iconicpodcast.com for news, updates, and new episodes.
Thanks for listening.